Good evening. In the news tonight, third-party presidential candidates are left out of the Republican and Democratic debate this evening at Hofstra. What does Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein have planned?
Let's be clear, WBAI listeners, that we're actually experiencing a police state, not a political debate.
Criminal justice reform is front and center at the New York City Council. And Carl Dick speaks with us from Charlotte, North Carolina, following the shooting of 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, September 26, 2016. Beginning with the Democratic and Republican debate this evening at Hofstra University out on Long Island. It is a debate of the two establishment parties, the one which anointed Hillary Rodham Clinton as the Democratic nominee and outsider showman Donald Trump as the Republican nominee. But what's missing from the debate are third-party candidates, Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party and Dr. Jill Stein from the Green Party. David Cobb is campaign manager for Dr. Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka.
Dr. Stein is already on campus. She has been denied access to Hofstra on a number of occasions. In fact, even with MSNBC, Fox News, and ABC News issuing credentials for her, they will not allow her to stay on campus. So literally, she has to come in and out of this public institution and public university, even to do initial media interviews. What we're going to do on the very last media interview is have an entire group of supporters meet her at the exit and have a people's debate where we will have representatives of the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, 15 Now, Move to Amend, the opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. A whole host of movement folks will actually host a genuine people's debate, at which point we will then march together to a secure location where Dr. Stein will actually participate live using Facebook Live and Twitter and Periscope, using cutting-edge tools to literally insert herself live into the corporate-managed debate. And let's be clear, WBAI listeners, that we're actually experiencing a police state, not a political debate. And yet we are using the open internet, community radio, and every tool at our disposal in order to ensure that people have a right to hear from political candidates who are calling for an end to the illegal, immoral wars, a call to transition to clean alternative energy sources, a call to dismantle the police state. We are going to do everything that we can to continue to get larger, stronger, and better organized.
And so your expectations for the Republican and Democratic debate this evening?
Well, listen, we know what it's going to be. It's going to be a bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. We know absolutely and without question that there will not be a real debate on the issues. There will not be a real debate on how to actually solve the climate crisis. There will not be a debate and no one calling for the abolition completely of all student debt and free college tuition. There will not be anyone calling for single-payer universal health care. There will not be anyone calling to abolish in its entirety the illegitimate idea that corporations have constitutional rights or that money is speech via a constitutional amendment. In other words, there won't be anyone representing the hundreds of millions of Americans who understand that we need peaceful, nonviolent revolution in this country, and that's what the Stein-Baraka campaign represents.
And so this evening, how can people follow along with Dr. Stein and supporters?
Go to jill2016.com and follow the link to either Facebook Live if you want to watch the video stream, or go to Periscope or Twitter, and you'll be able to follow it there. We anticipate the folks at Periscope and Twitter have told us that they are giving us the tools that they give to the NFL for the Super Bowl. So this really is a historic opportunity to deploy new technology and the open internet into the political space and actually breaking the stranglehold of the two dominant political parties and the corporate media together. And remember, folks, you're only hearing this because you're listening to WBAI Radio, people's media, where we're not dependent upon the corporate sponsors, and the corporate filters do not prevent us from having this kind of conversation. So use the internet, use community radio, use your own social media to actually tell the story. Don't hate the corporate media. Become the people's media.
David Cobb is campaign manager for Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein and Green Party vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka. Protests are already going on at Hofstra University on Long Island. Rob Balunas is a political science senior at Hofstra University. He says overall, the mood is excitement on campus. Balunas is connected with the Not Who We Are campaign. He says Donald Trump doesn't speak for students at the university.
My objection particularly is the fact that Donald Trump's rhetoric is really not just driving a wedge in the U.S., but also internationally. His rhetoric has scared our allies abroad. His rhetoric has stirred up tension domestically. He seems to fail to realize that words have meaning, and how he really came to prominence through stirring up some of the most nasty and dark feelings in this country. The racism, the bigotry, the xenophobia, all of that Donald Trump has used to get to where he is today. And as not just a member of the Hofstra community, but as an American, that's not who I am.
But it is who some people are. In the upstate community of Sloatsburg, there's praise for Donald Trump. At a gathering Sunday afternoon, one millennial said Republican lives matter. Another said Trump will make America great again. A third said if Trump runs America like he runs his companies, we'll be in good shape. This despite the fact that Trump declared bankruptcy four times, despite evidence which shows that he runs his companies into the ground. Terry O'Neill is president of the National Organization for Women. Speaking about the Women Want to Know campaign, which premieres tonight on Twitter, she says women want important issues discussed at the debate this evening. O'Neill touts Clinton's policies compared to Trump's, which she says are unknown.
On child care, the candidates' different approaches to child care, I think women really want to know how Donald Trump actually would help them around child care. His initial proposal was only for the 0.01%. It would put lots of money in the pockets of his daughter Ivanka and other women who are up at her level of income and wealth. Very little for women who really need the extra help for child care. And by contrast, not only with Hillary Clinton, she's got a plan, the goal of which is you don't ever pay more than 10% of your income for child care. And so it would be subsidies, it would be a lot of things. So that's the plan. But not only that, here's what's brilliant about what Clinton has proposed. When she started looking at getting people being able to get out of college debt-free, she asked her staff, tell me what's going on in colleges. Well, in community colleges, the average age of the students is 28, and they have like 1. Something on average children. The most common reason for students dropping out of community college is failure to have child care. Hillary Clinton has proposed, as part of her debt-free college proposal, free child care in all the community colleges. So women want to know these things, and quite frankly, women that I talk to have never heard of this. I'm kind of a wonk, and I read all this stuff, but you know, women going through their daily lives, as busy as they are, we want to know. We want this lifted up. We want those issues lifted up. I also have a very serious concern about women as they age. We have a huge bulge in the population. It's called the baby boom. Most people have heard of it. And we are looking at a retirement income crisis in this country as baby boomers live longer and have fewer savings, because for 30 years, middle class incomes have been flat and the pensions have been taken away. So women really need to know what is going to happen to Medicare when Donald Trump and Paul Ryan privatize it, and what's going to happen to Social Security when Donald Trump and Paul Ryan privatize it. Now, he said waffly language like he's not going to, but then he says Paul Ryan is correct. We want to know.
Women want to know about reproductive health.
Women definitely want to know about reproductive health. Donald Trump has specifically said there has to be some form of punishment for women who seek abortions. And let me tell you why I believe he's dead serious about this. In Indiana, Mike Pence's state, a young woman named Purvi Patel spent more than a year in prison because she tried to have an abortion. Make this clear. She was imprisoned for trying to have an abortion. Another young woman in Indiana, Bebe Shui, was distraught, attempted suicide, spent time in prison again because she was pregnant at the time that she attempted suicide, and she was prosecuted under Indiana's feticide law. Make no mistake, when Donald Trump says there has to be some form of punishment, he's thinking about what Mike Pence has set up, and that is, in fact, to imprison women who try to have abortions. I want to know, you know, what kinds of laws he's going to he's going to put forward.
And women want to know about immigration.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you know, we've seen that Barbara Boxer has called for an investigation into whether Trump model management violated the immigration laws. Donald Trump is out there saying, we're going to block all the Muslims from coming into this country. We're going to block people from countries with, quote unquote, a terrorism connection, which, if I may say, Rachel Maddow pointed out recently that that would include Germany, because their terrorist cells exist in Germany, and so there is a terrorist connection. So women, and in fact, women voters are very, very supportive of the refugees. Women voters poll high on being welcoming to the Syrian refugees who need to get away from the devastating civil war that they're facing. Women voters are very much in favor of comprehensive immigration reform with a path to citizenship. And Donald Trump is actually talking about massive roundups.
And women are very concerned with Donald Trump saying that stop and frisk should come back because many young men were stopped and frisked for no reason. It was unconstitutional.
Yes.
And he wants to bring that back.
The federal courts have already ruled that idea unconstitutional, and here's why it is. It is nothing less than racial profiling. I suppose in some kind of theoretical world, you might be able to adopt a stop and frisk policy that would not be racist, but here and now, in the reality, stop and frisk has been a major component of mass incarceration and what we now call the so-called carceral state around incarceration. Now, that stop and frisk is part of broken windows policing. It's also part of the zero tolerance schools. And if I can just give you a little statistical thing that should open all of your listeners' ears. So we know in New York and Chicago and Boston, we did a study, the African American Policy Forum did a study, and that shows that African American boys in these zero tolerance public schools are 6 times more likely than white boys to be suspended for essentially the same behavior. But African American girls are 10 times more likely than white girls to be suspended for the same behavior. That is part and parcel of broken windows policing, of stop and frisk. In America, it can't be done without racial bias. It is clearly unconstitutional, and we won't stand for it.
Terry O'Neill is president of the National Organization for Women. And Carl Dix, founding member of the Revolutionary Communist Party, says what the debate tonight is about is how to continue to repress people around the world.
You have a fascist blowhard in Donald Trump, and you have imperialist war criminal in Hillary Clinton, you know, and those are criminal choices of a criminal system. And nobody who wants to see anything good done for people around the world and in this country should choose either of those. I say we need to overthrow this system, not vote for it. And just think about, is either of those candidates going to do anything about the horror that has people in Charlotte and across the country in the streets right now? Are either of them going to do anything to stay the hands of these murderous police? And look at the fact that what has been happening in Charlotte is that people are standing up and resisting the horror of police getting away with murder. Because if you saw this video, in fact, a couple of videos of the police killing of Keith Lamont Scott, what you see is a black man going about his life, waiting to pick up his daughter, who is set upon by police, who rock his car, bang on it, ignore his wife's pleas not to harm him, that he doesn't have a weapon, and end up shooting him and then concocting lies about how it happened. And look, this happens right on the heels of the police murder of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we saw a video of a black man being walked down the street by armed police officers with his hands in the air, and who shoot him, murder him, gun him down, right on the heels of the police killing of 13-year-old Tyree King in Columbus, Ohio. And it really is hitting people that again and again and again police kill and get away with it. The whole system backs them up. And people are like, this needs to stop. And people are in the streets powerfully demonstrating, showing that that's how they feel. And I'll tell you, that's what drew me down to Charlotte. I saw this happening. I saw the police throwing tear gas at people. And I was like, I have to be there. And the other thing that hit me is everything that people have done to try to deal with this horror of police killing people for nothing other than the color of their skin, from electing officials, trying to get better supervision for police, better training, body cameras on police. With all of that, it continues to happen again and again. And look, it's going to take revolution and nothing less to end this once and for all. And that faces us up to the need to be scientific, to understand why things are the way that they are, what we need to do to stop them, how revolution could actually be made, and the kind of world that could be brought into being through revolution. And I'm in Charlotte right now, but I'm going to be back up in New York on October 8th, and I'm coming back for a program where Cornel West and myself are going to launch a new book by Bob Avakian called The New Communism, which gets into all of that, how we could make revolution, why we need to do it, the kind of world we could bring into being through it, and how we could go about making revolution against all the might that they have. And anybody concerned about the future of humanity and the state of the world really needs to be there for that launch Saturday, October 8th at the Schomburg at 1:30 p.m.
You can find out more about the launch of Bob Avakian's book, The New Communism, by going to revcom.us. As it stands now, Clinton has a 58% chance of becoming the next president, even though national polls have her leading by only 2%. This is according to Nate Silver's 538. When Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face off this evening at Hofstra, advocates for children want them to lay out their plans to meet the needs of our youngest citizens. Andrea Sears reports.
Jennifer March, who heads the Citizens Committee for Children of New York, believes instituting a strong agenda for early childhood programs in the first 100 days of the next administration would be a good start.
An ambitious effort to make sure that infant, toddler, childcare, and preschool are readily available, high quality, and affordable across income ranges would have a phenomenal impact.
Right now, Head Start and other preschool programs funded by federal, state, and local sources serve fewer than half of all children in the country. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
This evening, tune in to WBAI at 8:30 p.m. for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!'s coverage of the presidential debates. And tomorrow evening, tune in to Randy Credico's program as he speaks with Dr. Jill Stein, beginning at 5 p.m. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Each week, Gotham Gazette publishes a comprehensive article, The Week Ahead in New York Politics. It previews key events and issues to watch for. Gotham Gazette's Ben Max has highlights.
As the week begins, the eyes of the country are on the presidential debate. Many of New York's top political figures will be there, including Mayor Bill de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo. Most of Tuesday, of course, will be devoted to the fallout from the debate and the spin room, so to speak. But even though there's a great bit of focus on the presidential race this week, and there will be from now through November 8th's election day, there's also a lot of city and state political business on the agenda. For example, it's a very busy week at the city council this week, including the council's full-body stated meeting Wednesday afternoon. Moving on from that Wednesday hearing, on Thursday morning, a major event to watch for this week is a city council oversight hearing on the lifting of deed restrictions from Rivington House. This has been a controversial process that the de Blasio administration has received quite a bit of criticism over for several months. Now, both the city's Department of Investigations and the city comptroller already released damning reports on the lifting of those deed restrictions, where a former nonprofit health facility is now becoming luxury housing. Outside of the city council, a couple other key events this week include Governor Cuomo speaking at the Association for a Better New York on Tuesday midday. It's unclear exactly what Cuomo will announce when he speaks in Manhattan on Tuesday afternoon, but he's very likely to take press questions after, and the stories will continue about what the governor may have been able to prevent if he had been more on top of his state economic development programs and had better measures for checks and balances within those programs instead of stripping power away from the state comptroller, which he and the legislature did in 2011. There are a variety of other political events in New York City to watch for this week, and we've detailed them all at Gotham Gazette. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other news, Vivian Velasquez stands on the steps of City Hall on Monday afternoon on behalf of her husband. He was recently incarcerated. She talks about the fees being charged to family members when they put money into prison commissaries.
Every time that I put in $40, it costs me $7 more. If I put in $50, it costs me $10 more. So the more money that I put in, the more money I'm being charged. We're fighting to get the waivered in order for us to be able to support our families at home. Not only do we have to support our family members that are inside Rikers Island, but we also have to support our families at home.
No family member or loved one should be forced to pay large fees in order to get basic necessities, such as shampoo or a phone call or some cigarettes.
New York City public advocate Tish James says for far too long, families and loved ones of inmates have been exploited by private companies who only care about the bottom line.
And by far the easiest and best way to put money in an inmate's commissary account is to wire money into account. But the reality is that too many loved ones and family members are being charged exorbitant fees. And currently, they are charged unreasonable service fees by contractors. For instance, if a family member wants to deposit just $10 into a commissary account, these vendors charge them $5. $10 plus a $5 fee. Is that right?
No.
That's right. $5 might not seem like a lot of money, but the reality is that individuals who are on Rikers Island, the vast majority of them are on Rikers Island because they cannot afford the bail of $3,000 or less.
That's right.
$5 is a lot of money. And $500 is even more money. And so these fees are imposed each and every time you deposit money into the account. And we all know that they are compounded over a period of time.
A new bill at the city council will cap these fees at 1% of the deposit amount.
So if, in fact, you place, you know, $10 into account, it's only going to be 1% of that, 10 cents. And we limit it to $5, whatever the amount is. So if, again, you deposit $500, the total amount of the fee will be $5. Even if you deposit $600, the fee will only be what?
$5.
That's the cap, $5.
Yeah.
We will never, and we would, and we all know that we led a campaign in the city years ago when we wanted to limit the amount of interest that banks were charging. We would never tolerate this type of behavior. And we should never tolerate it for those who unfortunately may be invisible to others, but they're visible to all of us.
Yes.
And we care about them.
Yes.
And it's really critically important that we raise our voices and we stand with those individuals, and that working people each and every day should not be, taken advantage of.
That's right.
These are exorbitant fees, and we should not extort fees from individuals who just want to make sure that their loved ones who are doing their time, that they don't have to pay exorbitant fees for shampoo and cigarettes and things like that. and slippers.
Transaction fees, says James, are nothing more than profiteering by third-party contractors at the expense of New Yorkers, that no company should be allowed to take advantage of New Yorkers. Sandra Phillips' son is a first-time offender. He is incarcerated. She speaks out at City Hall on behalf of her son and other inmates and their families who don't have a voice. Phillips says the corrections and judicial system has subjected them to abuse of power, intimidation, and insensitive and inhumane conditions, that instead the correction system should be responsible for supervision, for safety, for medical care, and security of inmates. But she says corrections officers often fail to meet these standards.
The concern, my concern, is that the environment of a prisoner should be modeled in every way how we want prisoners to behave upon their release. In the aftermath, we want them to be more respectful and compassionate for others and respect for the law. That means while they are incarcerated, the prison has to be law-abiding. But prisons are neither. What our prisons teach, it is normal to, the normal behavior is to hate your enemies and to harm them. Prisoners will answer with violence for the violence that has been perpetrated against them in prison. Consequently, they return back to our communities, our families, and society with a mental that is mental instability. Therefore, a prison reform is desperately needed. Prisoners' lives matter. Prisoners' rights matter.
Nine pieces of legislation are being considered at the City Council. Earlier today, Queens Councilmember Elizabeth Crowley, who chairs the Committee for Criminal Justice, spoke with WBAI News.
Today we have a number of bills that will be voted out of committee and a number of bills that will be hearing for the first time.
And so what is the importance of some of these bills? Because there's been a lot of talk about the abuses at Rikers and in other prisons, and
right.
Some of these bills are meant to rectify some of these abuses.
Well, first, the level of violence is out of control, despite what the mayor has reported recently. Serious inmate-on-inmate assaults have been increasing, and the overall level of violence is higher now than it's ever been. In terms of criminal justice reform, we have a number of bills today that will be heard for the first time, one being sponsored by the speaker and co-sponsored by myself, which would require the Department of Investigations to have an inspector general for the Department of Correction, something that is its own office within the DOI office, but would have more staff and could investigate any type of inmate, correction officer, and inmate violence, and make sure that policies and programs within the department are doing all that they can do to increase level of safety and make sure that inmates' rights are being adhered to.
New York City Councilmember Elizabeth Crowley, who chairs the City Council's Criminal Justice Committee at City Hall today. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, September 26, 2016. The news was produced with Andrea Sears, Ben Max, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.